You're listening to the Celebrate Recovery Podcast, Episode 13, The Predictable Pattern of Relapse.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another Celebrate Recovery Podcast. My name is Johnny, I'm a believer who struggles with alcoholism. With me as always is Bob. Bob, would you say hello?
Hey everybody, this is Bob Wood. I'm a believer that struggles with drug addiction and sexual addiction. And Johnny, it is good to hear your voice.
It is very nice to be back online with you. A couple of weeks ago, we had little problems. I did something kind of silly. I upgraded my system here, and some of the programs that we use to record this podcast decided they didn't want to work. But I think we've got them all back together now, and we can bring you a live podcast again. But I think last week we had Tina's testimony on. I thought that was a pretty cool thing there. I like hearing testimonies and people's lives being changed as a result of the program. So I enjoyed that as well. But Bob, what's it like out there in Vegas this week?
Oh, it's gorgeous out here. It's been about 50s during the evening and about 80s during the day, and we're just thoroughly enjoying it. And in fact, we've got a big Friday night coming up this week. We're going to be talking about the effects of pornography.
Oh,
and
wow.
How that's transforming families and lives and marriages. And I'm excited to be able to present and talk about this topic and say that Celebrate Recovery is relevant to deal with this issue.
That's great. Is that a church-wide thing?
It's going to be a church-wide thing. In fact, this last weekend, we had a guest speaker who started Triple X Church.
Okay.
And he talked about pornography and kids. And, of course, how can you talk about pornography and kids when you've got so many adults in the room that are struggling with it themselves?
Mm-hmm.
And so we had a church-wide promotion for Celebrate Recovery and the whole congregation know that you can come to Celebrate Recovery for this issue. And we're starting our men's sexual addiction group this Friday night.
That's great. That's what senior pastor support is all about right there. So
I agree. I felt fully supported and really encouraged, and I look forward to what God's going to do this Friday night.
Well, tell Judd and the team over there, we said thank you for being behind you, and I think that's really exciting.
I will make sure I do that. It'd be great to get him on a podcast, wouldn't it?
It would be. And now that we've said it on the air, Judd, you have to come now. We've called
that's
you
right.
out.
That's right. We've called him out.
I hope you still have a job when this is over.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks, Johnny. Thanks for putting the frying pan there.
Yeah. Well, you know, the other thing is, about your weather, isn't it great to have this seasonal weather? Come on, 80s during the day. I mean, that's not November.
Yeah, it's been pretty nice out here. Normally, I guess it's a little bit colder, but it's a welcome relief after the summer that I had out here.
Yesterday, it was 89 degrees in Orange County. 89 degrees.
I mean, you can barbecue for Thanksgiving in that kind of weather.
You can. You actually can.
Now, how are you guys recovering from all those fires? I mean, we saw some of the smoke all the way out here in Vegas. How was Saddleback affected by that?
You know, it was very close to the church. It was, if you've been to Saddleback, you know there's a toll road that kind of runs next to our church. It was on the other side of the toll road from us. It got pretty close at one point. A number of families were in danger. But as far as I know, I don't know of anyone who lost their home due to the fire in our area. Now, in San Diego, just 80 miles down the road, thousands and thousands of people were displaced and lost their homes. But I don't know personally of anybody in our church who lost their house. But I know small groups were out there with hoses putting fires out and just kind of rallying together. And it got scary for a while there, for sure.
And wasn't even your Celebrate Recovery team out there helping and volunteering and serving food and drinks and stuff to the firefighters?
Yeah, we had a staging area here. Where we meet was they turned that into the staging area for a lot of the local fire firehouses. They were out here, and basically Friday night we ordered extra food, and we were thinking that the staging area would still be there, but they decided to get real aggressive with a lot of the fires at that time, and so the guys spread out. So our team cooked all the burgers and everything else that we had bought. It was our last barbecue of the season, actually. And then took them to the fire lines and gave them out to the firefighters that were there. So
wow.
That was pretty cool. Yeah.
And then that was awesome.
The following weekend, we did we honored all the firefighters and police officers. And it was a really cool weekend. It was a really cool thing. So
that's awesome. I'm so glad that you guys were there and be able to be, you know, in the front lines of what was going on. That's really cool.
Yeah, it was, you know, I think that stuff like that really brings a community together, and this church is a big part of our community, and so, you know, it was sort of felt like a natural fit in a lot of ways.
That's great. So,
well, Bob, we're going to talk about something today that I think is really important. We're getting closer and closer to the holidays, and for many of us, that can be a rough time of year. So we're going to start a discussion about relapse. Not all of us have a family that we feel is safe and that we can trust and that we feel comfortable with. And as a result, the holidays can sometimes be less than happy. Bob, what do you think about that? Is that something that you've experienced?
Yeah, for a lot of people it is. And I think, you know, especially if they're fairly new into their recovery, you know, people that are just beginning their journey and they're coming up on the holidays, we talk about going through a lot of firsts in recovery. You know, your first Thanksgiving, your first Christmas, your first New Year's, your first birthday, your first loss, your first, you know, wedding or whatever these different things are, and learning how to go through those things in a healthy way and not revert back to old behavior, especially if the person's family is part of the dysfunction.
Mm-hmm.
It can make it even more difficult to go through that. And so I think as we begin to talk about this subject, it is so important that we understand some of the signs and understand some of the things that come up so that we can see the relapse before we actually take that first drug or drink or bite or, you know, look or whatever it is that we use to medicate our feelings.
Yeah, no, that's interesting, because I was just going to ask you, do you feel like relapse is something that only happens for drug addicts and alcoholics?
I think that would be I would be completely wrong if I thought that, because I see so many people that revert to all. I mean, think about the person struggling with an eating disorder.
Yeah.
And heading into the holidays, when we go to more parties and honor food and have food at the centerpiece of more celebrations over the next, you know, 60 days or so than any other time of the year. And how tempting would it be for somebody with an eating disorder to relapse into their food of choice?
Right.
I think that would be a tremendous temptation. You know, parties with alcohol certainly are going to be part of it as well.
And even, you know, I think about codependency. You know, I mean, if I see, you know, for me, sort of one of the big flags of codependency is saying yes to something that I really should say no to, you know, sort of being bullied into a situation where I've got to go to a couple of different Thanksgiving dinners. I got to do, you know, everything right to please everybody, because if I don't behave the right way, everyone's Christmas is going to be ruined. You know?
Oh, absolutely. And that's such a huge weight to carry.
Right.
Going into the holidays.
Even some of that stuff that, you know, it's a really hard line to say, well, when's a relapse and when's a, you know, when are you say all that stuff. I think what's important is that instead of sort of focusing on, well, you know, what's the line, is to say, well, what got me there, you know, and what do I need to watch out for? And so that's why we're going to talk about basically what we're calling the four C's of relapse. And it comes from Life Healing Choices, which is a book that was written by Pastor John Baker. It just came out this August. And in Choice 7, he goes over the predictable pattern of relapse. And Bob, would you tell us what those four C's are?
Yeah, he kind of gives us this pattern that I really think lays out some warning signs or some things that we can point to and say, yeah, I'm in that mode or I'm in this mode. And the first one is complacency. And, you know, that is so easy to get into, especially if I've been in recovery for a little while. And we'll talk about more about that in a second. The other one is confusion, that sense of, you know, what do I do? Where do I go? What's the right choice in this situation? Compromise is huge. When I start, you know, letting certain things go, well, it'll be okay this time. And then, of course, the last one is catastrophe. And at that point, I'm really in the throes of a relapse situation.
Yeah. Yeah. What's interesting is that, you know, while catastrophe may be the acting out, the relapse didn't necessarily happen there. What do you think about that, Bob? Where do you think it starts?
Well, I think you're right on. I think most people don't wake up one day and just decide to relapse.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a series of choices. It's a series of events. It's a series of different decisions that a person makes in their life that concludes into that relapse mode. Most people tell me that, you know, relapse happened you know, a long time before I ever took the first drink or first drug or first bite or, you know, looked on the internet or whatever it was. And I think complacency, just looking at, if we talk about that just for a few minutes.
Yeah, let's get into it.
Complacency is a huge part of it. It is so easy, you know, after I've kind of begun the recovery process and the pain goes away. This is something I talked about a couple of weeks ago, is what brought us into recovery, that moment, that bottom, the painful situation. Well, after I've been in recovery for a while, that begins to go away.
Yeah.
It does get better. And then a lot of times, so does my commitment level to recovery.
Mm.
Because now I'm not feeling as desperate. I'm not feeling as, you know, like I have to be there all the time. And so I just start to let other things creep into my life.
Yeah.
And complacency begins to take over.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, it doesn't have to be a thing of where I'm completely better now. That relationship is completely better now, or I'm, you know, I don't feel the pain as much as I used to. It's like, it's really more, I can handle this much pain, you know, or my life was so out of control before I started this, and now it's not as bad.
Right.
So, you know, in retrospect, everything's looking pretty good.
Right.
You know?
It's not that I'm pain-free necessarily, it's just more manageable.
Right. And it's like, well, you know, that relationship that I had to end, yeah, that hurt like crazy, but now I've been working on it, and I've had a few months or a year or more behind me over it, and I don't feel as much pain about that anymore, or whatever the situation is. It's really the comfort, you know. I start to feel comfortable, and that's such a dangerous place to be in when it comes to recovery, because it leads to the next couple of things. But what's something that we can do to make sure, when I start feeling that way, let's talk about a couple of different things I can do to kind of snap myself out of that complacency.
Well, the first thing that I notice is that when I start getting into that mode is I stop talking to people.
Mm.
I stop connecting with people. I stop sharing in group maybe about what's going on in my life. I stop connecting with my sponsor. I stop connecting with my accountability partner. I feel like there's really nothing going on in my life right now. Everything's going pretty good, and I really don't have anything to share. And for me, that's a dangerous place for me to be. And those are tangible things that I can look to and say, if I'm not talking to people, that's something that I need to start doing. Even if I don't feel like I've got something to say, I still need to reach out, pick up that phone, call somebody, and begin to reconnect on that level.
So really the first thing you need to do is realize you've become comfortable.
Exactly.
So what are some ways, I mean, how do you realize that you're comfortable, I guess? You know, I mean, I guess it's like when you get into a hot jacuzzi or a hot spa. You know, when you first get in, it kind of hurts and your skin kind of tingles. And then the more you kind of sink into it, the more you're in it, you kind of feel more and more comfortable. And then pretty soon it's almost like, well, it's not as hot as it used to be. You know?
Right.
Well, that spa is still 110 degrees. You just adjusted to it. You know?
Right.
So how can we sort of realize, hey, I'm a little too comfortable? And I think like what you said about I'm not reaching out, maybe that's a sign. What are some other things that are good indicators that we've gotten too comfortable in our recovery?
I think one of them would be and I'm going to talk about this in relationship to working through the steps and working through the principles.
Sure.
If I don't know where I'm at in working the principles, mm-hmm. if I don't know where I'm at in that process, mm-hmm. that's probably a sign that I've gotten complacent. If I don't know I'm in that kind of, you know, principle number 7 and connecting with God and connecting with others, or if I'm not serving in some way, I need to know exactly where I'm at in relationship to those principles, because if I don't, I'm probably getting into that complacent mode.
Yeah.
And so it's at that point I need to pick up the tools and start, you know, moving forward again.
Yeah, and you said something in that I think is so key. You said, if I'm not serving. I think that that deciding not to serve is a huge step towards comfort and a huge step towards complacency, because serving, and even if it's, you know, if it's helping out at the barbecue, if it's greeting at the door, or if it's leading a group, if it's doing table service, whatever it is, serving shakes us up a little bit, you know, and it reminds us, By seeing other people when they're deep in their pain, it reminds us of what it was like for us when we first started. By being a part of somebody else's journey, it helps keep us connected. So I think if I'm sort of starting to feel like, oh, it's not as important that I show up and help here. It's not as important that I, you know, give this or do that. I think that's when we're sort of in danger of feeling a little bit of comfort as well.
And don't you think, too, that, like, when it comes to serving and when it comes to kind of stepping out of that comfort zone, that it should stretch us a little bit?
Yeah.
It should cause us to feel a little bit uncomfortable. You know, maybe we've got to get there early. Maybe we've got to stay a little bit later. Maybe we've got to, you know, we're not really a people person, but we need to do greeting because, you know, it's so important for our own personal recovery to reach out our hand
to another person. I think of an example of a young man that was in our ministry. He was working his program. He's doing everything he needed to do. And he came forward one day to Tina and he said, "Tina, I need to be a greeter. I don't want to be a greeter, but I need to be a greeter." He knew he needed to step out of his comfort zone. He's a very introverted, quiet guy, but he started greeting at the door, shaking hands, saying welcome, and handing out a program. And God really used him because he wasn't somebody who was sort of gregarious and making people feel uncomfortable as they walked through the door. You know, he just was there very gently greeting people. And, yeah, I mean, he stepped out of his comfort zone. And, you know, a few weeks later, it was really cool to watch the transformation because he wasn't as you know, quiet, and he was talking to more people, and he was being pulled into conversations, and, you know, he progressed slowly but surely through that comfort zone, and by acting on that, kind of gave him some more things to do, you know, some more ways to serve. I do think so, too, and, you know, Bob, I think a lot of times when it comes to serving, I didn't take days off from drinking.
Right.
You know, I didn't go, well, you know, I it's Wednesday. Maybe I'll just cool it tonight. No, I drank every night, and there was nothing more important in the world to me than that. And so sometimes I feel that way, that we should feel that way about our service as well. You know, I feel that we should make that a number one priority. Now that I'm out of that lifestyle, now that I'm finding healing, I need to make this as important as I used to make that. You know, and I definitely feel that way for participants that are new to the program. You know, your meeting needs to be as important as it was to go out and do whatever it was you did.
Right.
You know, and so even at Saddleback, we don't have Celebrate Recovery meetings every night of the week. So sometimes that means you need to serve, you know, to kind of fill that spot. So I think it's a really important thing to do to kind of shake us up and to kind of make us keep us reminded of what it's like. But yeah, I do think it should be a little bit uncomfortable sometimes.
And you said something in that last section there about, you know, recovery meetings and, you know, making recovery meetings a priority as well. You know, just showing up and continuing to make that because it's so easy during this time when we're going to more parties and have more functions and more family and more stuff going on to say, you know what, do I really need to go to recovery tonight?
Right.
I mean, I'm feeling okay. Everything's going well. Do I really need to, you know, stress myself out by going to that? And, you know, my answer is, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. It seems like the very things that helped us get to that place of peace, that helped us get to that place of wholeness, are the first things that we let go of.
Yeah. Yeah.
When we start getting busy. And yet that's the very thing I need to hold on to the most. And so if I need to do a service commitment to get me there, great. Do the service commitment. If I need to cancel some events that are going on in order for me to get there, then that's what I need to do. And once I made a recovery and my relationship with Christ the primary focus in my life, it made a lot of the other decisions and other things that I had to do a lot easier to make.
Yeah.
Because if it was going to jeopardize me coming to recovery, if it was going to jeopardize my sobriety, if it was going to jeopardize some aspect of my relationship with God, I wasn't going to do it.
Yeah, and, you know, I think about this, too. What you're saying is so true, because if I start to think, do I really need to do that? Do I really need to go to that meeting? Do I really need to serve in that way? That is complacency.
Exactly.
Because it's not as important as it used to be.
That's exactly right.
So that's a huge red flag when we start feeling like, oh, it's just group. It's just an hour. So what? I'm just going to leave early after large group tonight.
You know, right.
There's plenty of leaders. They don't need me.
Right.
Or I've been coming for 5 years. I've got more stuff I have to do. That is like, you need to picture like a guy with a flag saying, hey, that's complacency. That's complacency, you know, and run to a group.
Because
that means we're in danger at that point, you know.
And, you know, you and I have been doing this for a number of years and been involved and going to a lot of different groups. And, you know, I'm sure that you felt on times going to, you know, celebrate recovery that I really don't feel like going, but I know it's where I need to go. And somebody told me a long time ago that my feet need to be trained. My head's going to tell me, oh, I don't need to go. They've got, just like you said, they got plenty of leaders. They really don't need me. Everything's going to be fine. But my feet are trained.
Right.
My feet know to take me up to celebrate recovery every single time.
Right.
And so I try to follow that.
What I find is so interesting, Bob, is for me, those nights that I don't want to go to group are the nights I get the most out of group.
Isn't that amazing how that happens?
You know, even the Sunday mornings where I go, you know, Green Bay's on at 10 o'clock. I'm going to miss half the game. You know, I'd rather stay in, you know, I'd rather stay home or whatever it is. And, you know, I mean, even though I'm on a church staff, I still feel that way sometimes. I mean, we can be real here, right?
I think so.
But the mornings where I feel that way and I go to church anyway, I get the most out of it. It's something amazing. Small group is the same way for me. My couple small group that my wife and I are in that's not Celebrate Recovery, there are nights where I'd rather stay home and just kind of spend the time with her. But the nights that we make it and we go, even in spite of that, man, I get so much out of it. There's just something about being there that, you know, once I get to Celebrate Recovery on a Friday night, even if I don't feel like being there, man, the minute I see people coming, I get charged up. I'm ready to go. Now, the minute I go to a group that I rather would have, you know, missed, and I hear people sharing, again, it just speaks to me in a way that it's hard to explain, but it's real. So yeah. Well, let's go on to the next C. I think we covered complacency pretty good. The next phase of the predictable pattern is confusion. So, Bob, talk us a little bit through that.
Confusion is very confusing. And it can be very confusing to talk about. But a lot of times when I'm in that mode of confusion, I have to remember that God is not the author of confusion. And, you know, I don't talk a lot. I've got probably a pretty conservative view on spiritual warfare.
Yeah.
But I do believe that he is alive and well, and he's going to try to confuse us in ways, you know, the enemy's going to try to confuse us in ways to help us get off track, potentially go into relapse, as well as my own thoughts.
Yeah.
I mean, especially if I'm fairly new in recovery, I'm going to, you know, have a difficult time making the right decision at times because of my codependency, because I want to please my family, because I want to, you know, be the man. I want to, you know, work the perfect recovery program. Or it can be difficult to make good, clear decisions. And, you know, in this kind of situation, I really need other people to help me, because my stinking thinking is what got me in recovery in the first place.
Right.
And so even though I've been in for a while and the clouds are starting to lift, I still need people in my life to help me make good, solid decisions. And so any major decision I have in my life, I usually like to try to check with another person.
Yeah.
And make sure I'm not falling back into old behavior.
Yeah. I think there's a saying that a lot of people use in recovery where they say, I was in my head.
Yes.
You know, and it's like, I tried to explain that to somebody who hasn't done recovery, and they couldn't understand what I meant until one day this guy came up to me and he goes, I get it now. I was in my head all day yesterday,
right.
You know? And it's like, to me, that's confusion. You know, I'm listening to myself more than I'm listening to the prompting of the Holy Spirit, or I'm starting to try to convince myself that my problem wasn't as bad as it was, you know, or was it? You know, okay, so I'm already been complacent. I'm feeling a little comfortable. So now that I'm comfortable, was that relationship really as bad as it was?
Right.
I mean, did that person really do those things that I thought they did? Or was I maybe being a little judgmental? You know, and some of that stuff, some of those questions start bouncing around in our head, and it can just sort of fog our minds up, you know?
Right.
And Bob, I agree with you. I think that I do believe that the enemy is out there waiting to trip us up, and he's putting things in our path to trip us, but man, I can trip myself up pretty much on my own.
I'm my own worst enemy.
Yeah, and so there are times where I'll feel like, you know, oh, I was really being attacked. Well, maybe I was, but I think really I didn't want to do the right thing today.
Mm.
Really what I wanted to do was do what Johnny wanted to do today, you know, and that's just, you know, Johnny's will is not God's will. You know, I pray that it will become that way, but, you know, left on my own, my natural man is once there's times where it's like, I want to rebel.
Right.
You know, I want to do something I know I shouldn't. I've been too good for too long, darn it. You know?
Right.
And, And so I think, you know, certainly some of that prompting can come from the enemy, but I really believe that there are times when I just confuse myself by asking questions that maybe I don't need to ask. Like, do I really need to be here? Do I really need to, is this really working for me?
Oh, you know, that's a good question too.
You know, is it the program or is it really, is it me? Did I do all this? You know? And so I think some of those questions, and you mentioned, Bob, the new person coming to recovery, which I think is true, but what about somebody who's been around a long time? How do they start to get confused? Maybe it's a leader, maybe it's just a long-term participant, but how do they start to get confused when it comes to recovery?
Well, I think one of the ways is that we start avoiding people that give us honest feedback.
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever, you know, sponsored somebody and they don't come to you with a situation because they know what you're going to say to them?
Right.
They know that you're going to give them truth.
Right.
And they don't want to do it, so they don't come to you because they know that you're going to say that to them.
Right.
They know what you're going to say before you even get there. So that's one way, as I start, you know, because I want to do what I want to do when I want to do it.
Right.
But I was thinking of an example that hit me. I don't know, this was probably a year or so ago before I was in full-time ministry. I was at a business convention, and there was a cocktail party. And I was with a bunch of business associates, and I'd been in recovery for, gosh, you know, 10, 11 years, something like that.
Yeah.
I really don't have a desire to drink. I really, you know, there's no pull there. I really don't want to drink. It really doesn't come up that much for me. But I was at this cocktail party, and it was at that moment that alcohol started looking real attractive. Everybody was dressed real nice. It was kind of sophisticated. It was definitely in an arena that I was not used to drinking in. There was a, you know, I was never that sophisticated when I drank. But yet, it made it look very attractive.
Huh.
You know, nobody was falling down drunk, and there was that social kind of, like, uncomfortableness that was going on.
Yeah.
And everybody was having a few drinks to kind of loosen up a little bit. And I got to tell you, Johnny, at that moment, it looked really good.
Yeah.
And I was starting to get really thirsty. And I hope I'm not causing somebody to go into relapse mode right now. But that moment got confusing for me.
Right.
That moment was a situation where I didn't bring it on myself. I guess I did by going to the party. But at that moment, I'm thinking, well, was it really that bad?
Mm.
You know, couldn't I just have one drink and have it be okay? And, you know, fortunately, I had my, closest accountability partner with me, my wife, who's quick to point out that won't go well.
Yeah, that won't end well.
But it is confusing at times, and we are going to be thrown into situations that will create that confusion. And that was one that as soon as I got back from that event that I was at, I had to talk about it.
Yeah.
Because if I left that situation in my mind too long, like you said, being in my head, mm-hmm. I would let that fester and grow. And maybe the next time I went to something like that, it might be easy to say, you know what? I'm going to do it this time.
Yeah. Yeah. I think another way that sort of confusion can work in the context of a leadership team, I think sometimes we start to feel like, is that person really the right person to lead this ministry? Or, you know, do I really need to do what that person said? And I have a feeling that most of the people listening to this are leaders and in different form and functions at Celebrate Recovery. And I've seen that work in our own sober recovery. Well, somebody will come out of a group and they'll say, "Oh, I just don't like that leader," you know, or I don't feel like this person really had that much to give me. Bob, what do you think about that kind of a thing?
That is the beginning of a potential relapse, I think.
Yeah.
I think when I start letting resentment, when I start a distrust come in, or a personality conflict, which I think is kind of what you're pointing to.
Yeah,
where I just don't like that leader.
Right. I guess what I'm saying is that personality conflict can become a confusing situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because now I'm thinking more about that leader than I am about my own recovery or about helping other people through their recovery, you know. And Bob, doing what you and I do, traveling, doing the ALTs and, you know, answering questions on email and the blogs and stuff like that, we get a lot of people saying, you know, I don't agree. My M did this. And I don't agree, or my ministry leader did this, and I don't, is that okay? Or, you know, my leaders won't fill in the blank. And to me, that, when I think of that, the word that comes up is confusion for me, because it's sort of like they're getting on, that's starting to take away from the purpose of the ministry. the purpose of what they're doing. And so, you know, maybe a little off topic, but I guess what I'm saying is once we start to feel that way, the antidote is open communication.
Exactly.
You know, the antidote is going to that ministry leader and saying, hey, you made a decision that I'm still wrestling with. Can you explain to me why? Or, you know, whatever the situation is, or, you know, talking to your co-leader and saying, hey, man, you interrupted me last time I was going over the guidelines, and, you know, that's not cool. Rather than letting that fester and grow and becoming a confusing thing, nipping that in the bud is probably the antidote to that. What do you think about that?
I think you just hit something that's huge. It seems like when I'm the most confused about something or I'm struggling with something,
yeah,
is when I stop talking about it. And when we connect with the person, it's amazing how many problems can get solved by just simple, open, and honest communication.
Yeah.
And by going into the conversation with a spirit of reconciliation, with a spirit of curiosity, with a spirit of wanting to know what's going on and why the person's making certain decisions, I can't tell you how many times I've been confused, but yet I don't talk about it, and the confusion gets worse, not better.
Right.
And then as soon as I start talking about it and I start opening up about it, it's like God gives that wisdom that he talks about in James and pours it on top and allows me to begin to see things more clearly. I think that is huge. Open communication is a huge cure to confusion.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think, you know, like I said, I just think it's another way that this kind of stuff can creep in. You know, it doesn't have to just be something that is a part of my everyday recovery. It can be a real subtle thing that all of a sudden I start kind of pulling out of the ministry a little bit because of something else, you know, and my judgment gets cloudy.
And that's what happens is we do start to pull out. Even if we don't pull out physically right away, we start to pull out emotionally.
Right.
And we start to pull out spiritually because we do feel that disconnect. And so that's why it's so important to reconnect in that level.
Yep. All right, well, the third phase is compromise. And so we go through complacency where we start to feel comfortable. Then we get confused as a result of some of that, and our thinking gets fuzzy. And then we begin to compromise. So, Bob, what does compromise look like?
Well, I think for, you know, a lot of people in recovery, this is where we may not pick up what our drug of choice is,
mm-hmm,
but we may start picking up some other things.
Mm.
Maybe we start working too much. I mean, I'm sure that I can be guilty of that pretty much every day.
Yeah.
Where I start using work as a way to fill that void, or work as a way to find that, you know, satisfaction that I'm looking for, to find that esteem that I'm looking for. Maybe it's shopping and spending money. You know, that's certainly another one of my vices. I try to, you know, let go of some of these other ones, and I've still got a few that I hold on to for my comfort.
Sure. Sure.
But I notice that if I start making that compromise, it's only going to lead to one place.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, it's going to lead to a relapse in my recovery. Because, you know, when I'm in that compromised state, I'm really, I am saved, and God's spirit lives in me, and I feel secure in that.
Yeah.
But I can have a disconnect in my fellowship that I'm experiencing with God.
Right.
And when I start going to some of these other things, I do feel that disconnect.
Yeah. I mean, let's use your cocktail party experience as a touch point for that. So you go there and, you know, you start thinking, well, maybe I could just have one drink. And while in my mind, that first sip of that first drink constitutes a relapse, but maybe I won't really, and this is sort of a stretch, but bear with me. I'm not going to drink that glass of champagne, but I'm going to hold it so everybody thinks I'm part of this thing. You know what I mean?
Right.
After that, you know, there can be a lot of different ways. In fact, Bob, I had a real similar experience to you. I went to the grocery store of all places, where you should feel like you're pretty safe to shop. And I was with my wife and my kids, and we were walking around, and it was this real fancy Whole Foods kind of place. Well, they had this sign in the back that said NFL beer and food pairing tasting or whatever, you know, where they were going to put different kinds of stuff together. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. But what if my next thought would have been, well, I'll just go and I'll eat the food and smell the beer. I'm not going to drink it, but I'm going to smell it. Well, to me, that would have been a compromise. Because then, look how close I am. You know, I'm right there. And all it takes is for me to, you know, go from smelling to sipping, and then I'm right back at it. Because the thing that compromise does for me is it starts shame. And once shame creeps in, we're in big trouble, don't you think?
And you know, there's one three-letter word that is the beginning of compromise.
What's that?
The word yes.
Hmm.
And at that moment, you could have just said yes to taking that sip.
Right.
Or taking that sample, or I could have said yes to grabbing that drink, or, you know, as I'm getting ready to talk about sexual addiction this Friday, and just say yes to that proposition that gets made to me.
Mm-hmm.
And just in that one little word can absolutely transform somebody's life in a negative way.
Yeah.
And bring, and so, you know, shoring up, you know, having those barriers in place to help us in that situation. You know, like I would never go to a cocktail party without my wife.
Right, exactly.
If I was ever in that situation, I would never go there without my wife or with another person that was in recovery that understands me, that can hold me accountable.
Right.
So that I don't make that compromise, or, you know, I don't counsel somebody of the opposite sex in my office alone.
Right.
You know, the door's either wide open or we're in a very public space where I'm with my wife. You know,
right.
I try not to be caught in a room with a member of the opposite sex alone.
Right.
Just trying to build up some of these things, because I find those little compromises
right.
over time, you know, it may not be the first time or the second time or even the 20th time, but it could be the 21st time.
Right.
And it leads to something that can literally take everything from us.
Right. Now, it sort of also gets us back in that place where it's almost like I'm going to prove to myself that I'm not going to relapse. You know, in Lifestyle Choices, there's a line there that says, we go back to the unsafe place like the gamblers who says, and I'm reading this for you, Bob, let's go to Vegas and just see the shows. You know, that can put you in a really dangerous position because, you know, chances are you're going to walk by some slot machines when you're in Vegas. Amen, Bob?
It's pretty hard to not walk by slot. I mean, you can't get out of the airport and not go by slot machines.
Yeah, and so, you know, I mean, some of that stuff is just putting ourselves in the situations that we, you know, would have acted out in, and that can be a dangerous, dangerous thing as we begin to compromise. And I think it also, Bob, what you started this whole thing off on was talking about maybe that I – sort of switch things up a little bit. And so, you know, well, I'm an alcoholic, but, you know, so I can't drink, but I can do this because I'm not addicted to that yet, you know, that kind of a thing. And what are some ways that we can just protect ourselves from letting that spiral out of control?
Well, I think the biggest way is to be talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
With my sponsor, with my accountability partner, is to be talking about what's going on in my life. The other part of it for me is to recognize that there are other things out there that can draw me away.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'll just give you the example for myself, which was with sexual addiction and pornography.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I would draw lines in the sand
mm-hmm.
and say, you know, as long as I don't cross this line,
mm-hmm.
then I'm really not an addict.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm really not, you know, I haven't gone too far yet. Well, then I would cross that line, and what would I do? Draw another line.
Right, you just move the line, sure.
And so I kept justifying, just like you read, you know, about the gambler that comes back to Vegas to see shows.
Right.
I would just move that line a little bit further, and, you know, those are the very things that will cause me to end up in a situation that, again, like I said earlier, can, you know, steal everything from us. And that's what happened to me with my sexual addiction is I came to a point that I realized that if I continue down this road,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to lose my wife.
Mm-hmm.
I'm new into ministry. I'm going to certainly lose that. My career, it's going to be, you know, horrendous for me.
Right.
And I think that was, I had enough recovery in me
and
enough of these principles in me. And I talk enough about this for me to recognize it. And so I'm grateful for that. And at the same time, I have to be willing to look at those signs and be open and honest with somebody about it.
Yeah, and I think when we get to compromise, I think we start keeping secrets again, you know. And because I am compromising, and I probably know I shouldn't be, so I start keeping secrets. And that, to me, secrets are so, so, so dangerous because what can seem like a little thing, all of a sudden, I can't tell anybody about that little thing. Well, if it's such a little thing, why can't I tell anybody about it? because it's not such a little thing.
That's a great benchmark to know if we are in compromise mode. Because
right.
I need those things. I need some tangible things
yeah.
to help me know if I'm in that compromise mode.
Yeah.
And if I've got secrets in my life, I'm probably in it.
Oh, yeah.
If there's something in my life that I can't tell you or I can't tell, you know, my sponsor or whoever's, you know, part of my accountability team,
right.
then I'm probably in that compromise mode.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, just starting to compromise just sends us right back to square one, doesn't it?
It does.
Right back to the beginning. Just with a fresh new hurt habit or hang-up to deal with, you know. All right, well, that moves us to catastrophe. So, Bob, what do you think about that? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, and I think this is where we finally hit our bottom. This is where we start to see the effects that our the other three decisions have made on us. And, you know, I would say when I think about catastrophe, this is when I'm actually in that relapse mode. I've picked up the drink. I've picked up the drug. I've turned on the computer. You know, I've started compulsively eating or purging. I've gotten back into codependent relationships. I've started, you know, I've gone back on the hunt looking for that right relationship to fill that void. You know, that we can go on and on and on. Maybe I've gone back into, you know, same-sex lifestyle. This is where I've really, you know, my primary area of recovery, I have moved back in and found myself doing the same things that I used to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the word catastrophe is so powerful there, you know, because it's not, oops, well, I'll be okay, you know, or, I mean, it really can be a catastrophe on many, many different ways. And, you know, I mean, I think we need to get to a point, and where just losing my sobriety in that particular issue is a catastrophe enough, you know, just having to kind of go back and say, I'm back at day one. You know, one of the things, Bob, that I'll be real honest, that I sort of have gotten a little obsessive about is working out and exercise. I enjoy it. It makes me feel good. I like to, you know, go to the gym and lift weights and do some of that stuff. And I don't talk about it a lot because I think sometimes it's like, I'm really strong. You know, that's not what I'm trying to say. But I have taken that and sort of gotten a little obsessive over it. And I took a month and a half off from the gym. Because I am an addict, and I either do everything or I don't do it at all, right? And so I took some time off from the gym, and I got back into it, and day one was yesterday, and it was terrible. I hated it. I hated day one. I was weaker than I've been in a long time. I didn't look the way I feel comfortable looking. I didn't feel good. It hurt. I'm sore today. Day one was the worst. Well, that's over kind of a silly little thing. But think about that in terms of recovery. You know, after 4 years of recovery, of sobriety, and then I go out and I got to start day one again sometime. I don't want to do that. I don't want to start over. You know, I don't want to get to the point where here I am right back where I started. And I think recognizing those first three C's and acting on it when you see them is a great way to know it's coming. Bob, tell me your reaction to that kind of a thing.
Well, let me first just comment on the exercise thing. For me, just to make sure that I don't ever pick up an addiction, I stay as far away from it as possible. So, you know, I don't ever want that to become an issue in my life.
Right,
so I try to keep that a safe distance and keep a barrier out there so that I don't go too far with it. But on the other, you know, on a serious note, you know, when it comes to relapse, you know, over the years, I've gone to a lot of meetings, and I've heard a lot of people that have come back after a relapse. In fact, I was sharing this just yesterday with somebody. I was in a meeting, and I was taking my 12-year coin. And there was somebody in there that had 13 years that had recently relapsed.
Oh, man.
And it just made me realize that, you know, that could have been me.
Yeah.
If I don't pay attention to all these things, that here's somebody that had a year more than I did, that relapsed, I really need to be on guard. And it was very, you know, we use the word sobering for me to just realize that and to know that I need to shore up my recovery and I need to make sure that I'm paying attention to all these warning signs so that I don't end up, you know, in that situation.
Yeah.
And I really try to listen closely to people that share in a meeting that do relapse. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm always listening for the newcomer and kind of hearing what's going on in their life, and, you know, that helps drive band where I come from. But I really listen close to the person that's had significant recovery and then gone into some kind of relapse mode because I want to hear how they got there. So, you know, maybe I can avoid the same pitfall. And a lot of times what I hear is the very things that we've been talking about. Yeah. They got complacent. They started getting confused about what was going on in their life. They started making little compromises over a period of time. And then, boom, they ended up in a relapse that may have lasted for an extended period of time. It may not have been just one drink. It may have been 1 year of drinking or, you know, acting out or, you know, gone back to the strip clubs or whatever it was.
Bob, I think there's a couple things before we wrap up today. And I think we're going to continue this discussion next time we get together and sort of talk about the causes of relapse. This is the pattern, and I think we'll talk about the causes next time. But, Bob, what if someone's listening and either they have relapsed and they haven't told anybody about it, or they find themselves in one of those places? Let's first start with what would you say to somebody who has relapsed? What should they do right away?
Well, you know, one of the things that I love about recovery is just come back.
Yeah.
Just come home. We love you, and we want you to come back. And every time I see somebody that's come back after a relapse, I just want to throw my arms around them and say, I'm so glad that you're here.
Right.
Because so many people don't make it back.
Yeah.
You know, this is life and death. And sometimes people don't make it back. And so if you are breathing right now, and you're in that place and you're feeling like despair and down in the dumps and there's no way you can walk through that door, just come.
Yeah.
Let us just welcome you in with open arms and just love on you and help you get your life back on track, because you know what? None of us are above a relapse, and we want you to know that we care about you.
Yeah. Yeah, and I would just like to add to that. I think, Bob, some of the things that keeps people from coming back after relapse, I think the biggest thing is shame. You know, they don't want to admit that they fell away, and they don't want to admit that something like that happened. But I just like to echo Bob. There's no shame in admitting your weakness. In fact, that's what recovery is all about, is saying that, you know, I am weak, and I am a human, and I made some bad choices and made some bad decisions. But the difference between where I am now and where I used to be was that now I know where to go, and I know what to do to pick myself up and dust myself off and get working again. I'm not saying it's not serious. I'm not saying that it's not something that may cause some pain, but don't let something like that keep you from going out there and seeking recovery again. It's just too important to let anything get in the way of that. Now, Bob, on to somebody who maybe has been coming for a while. They're listening to this and they're going, oh my gosh, I am in compromise, or I am in complacency. What's the first thing they do to get themselves out of that?
First thing is to connect with somebody.
Yeah.
You need to start talking about it. You need to get with your sponsor. You need to get with your accountability team. You need to get with your recovery ministry leader, your small group leader. You need to get with somebody and start talking about it. You need to openly, honestly share what's going on in your life. And that will be the beginning of the healing process. Is, you know, I think it's in the book, it says the beginning of healing is revealing your feeling.
Right.
And that's where it's got to start.
And, you know, the tendency is to pull away, like we've said a few times today, Bob. The tendency is to isolate and to kind of handle it on my own. I would just suggest you fight that feeling as much as possible. You hear this, you say, I'm in one of these stages. Man, let's connect. Get together with somebody. And I'm talking to myself as much as anybody else.
Exactly.
These are universal things. You know what I mean? Recovery is, you know... one of the things I love about recovery is that it doesn't matter what you struggle with. It doesn't matter what your hurt, habit, or hang up is. We're all humans. We all go through these four C's. You know, this isn't something that's only for sex addicts or drug addicts or codependents, that we all go through them. And the power of celebrate recovery first is found in our higher power, Jesus Christ, but then it's how we do this with other people. So, you know, man, if I find myself in this thing, Bob, I'm going to call you and
exactly.
Other people around me, because I desperately do not want to relapse, and I don't want that for anybody that I know either. So, reach out, talk to your sponsor, talk to your accountability team, take the chance on being real and vulnerable and allow God to work in that situation. Well, hey, I think we're going to wrap that up today, Bob, and go next week. We'll go over the causes of relapse. Bob, anything you want to say as we wrap it up?
I just like to say it's just been a pleasure, and I need to be talking about this subject, and thanks for bringing this up and causing us to rethink the subject of relapse.
Yeah, I mean, anybody who thinks that relapse isn't a real option for them, isn't something that could happen to them, I mean, is probably confused, if not compromising and really close to that catastrophe. So we all need to keep in mind that we're a few bad choices away from a catastrophe. So, well, Bob, enjoy this week, and I'll talk to you soon. And don't forget, the holidays are coming up. Build that accountability team now so you have someone to go to when the weeks get rough. And we'll talk to you next week.